Dear students of my course, this is part 8 of the Network Science course, the 8th lecture, one but the last, and in these two concluding lectures I would like to give you a flavor about the dynamics of networks. Dynamics meaning not the dynamics inside the network or dynamical changes in the network, but dynamics meaning the evolution of the network, the reconfiguration of the network, the response of the network to the changes in the environment. So please open PhD SEM 8 PowerPoint file, and you should see the title Networks and Stability, Part 8, Adaptation of Complex Systems. And this is a hypothesis, so I would like to stress this at the very beginning. In the next slide, I am just repeating a former slide from a former lecture to you, which is giving you a summary of topological phase transitions. And I just would like to stress that networks do change their configuration, as I mentioned before, when the environment is changing. And the conformation change or the configuration change can be quite radical, starting from a random graph, going to a scale-free, towards a scale-free network having hubs, and dissociating to subgraphs at the very end. Now, the major message of this lecture is given you to the next slide, which is that having the title of Adaptation of Complex Systems. And the major message is that plasticity, rigidity, cycle form a general adaptation mechanism. I just would like to give you an introduction to this first, that we have two types of complex systems, plastic and rigid. And if you switch to the next slide, you can see the title Adaptation of Complex Systems, Rigid and Plastic Properties. And the system is rigid if it has a relatively stable structure and if it is unable to change that structure. Now, if the system is rigid, then the possibility of adaptation is relatively minor because the system cannot change. This is because it is rigid. And if the system is plastic, then the possibility of adaptation is relatively high because the system is able to change. However, if the system is plastic, like a clothes, for example, it cannot remember to the previous state, so it does not have a memory. If the system is rigid, like a brick, for example, then the system is remembering to the previous state, actually too well, and it does have a memory. So each of the systems, the rigid and the plastic, is having an advantage. The rigid system is having the advantage of the memory, and the plastic system is having the advantage of the adaptation. And the balanced system, which has actually both properties, and all complex systems are from this kind of balanced type, so they have plastic and rigid properties at the same time, those are having both the possibility of adaptation and the memory, the effect of adaptation as well. So if you just push the forward button, then you see the arrows appearing on the screen. And if the system is becoming learning competent, so it is exploring the environment, then it is going from rigid to plastic. And if it's becoming memory competent, so it is optimizing its workflow or function, then it is becoming rigid from plastic. So these are the two ways of changes, and these changes are usually happening in one after the other, so not at the same time, or different regions of the same network, if at the same time. And these changes are actually forming a learning cycle, which I will demonstrate to you in this lecture. Now, I will give you several examples of these plasticity-rigidity transitions, starting from very simple molecules and going to more complex organisms. The very first example is the example of molecular mechanisms of protein structure optimization. This is the title of the slide. And I'm showing you first the HSP60 chaperone machine, or the chaperone cycle of the HSP60 chaperone. HSP stands for Hitchcock protein, so this is the 60 kilodalton Hitchcock protein, which is a molecular chaperone, And these molecular chaperones are helping other proteins to acquire their correct state, their correct folded state. And this is done via the hydrolyzation of ATP. This is giving energy for the conformational changes of this cycle. And this is what we call a chaperone cycle. Now, this chaperone cycle is going through several states. The very first state is having an unfolded substrate. And here, the unfolded substrate is a plastic state, because if a protein is becoming unfolded, then it is able to accommodate many conformations. So therefore, it is a plastic state, having many states available at the same time. Now, if the chaperone, the HSP60 chaperone, is binding the unfolded substrate, it is expanding this unfolded substrate, and it is binding this substrate. Therefore, the substrate is unable to accommodate many conformations at the same time, but it is becoming quite expanded. Therefore, it is becoming more rigid. Now, in the next step of the chaperone cycle, the chaperone is releasing the substrate. So the substrate is again becoming more plastic, and it is able to find now its final folded state. If it is doing so and finding its folded state, then that is a unique state of the substrate, so it is becoming relatively rigid again. If it is not finding the folded state, then it is expanded again by the chaperone, and it is becoming rigid. So these plastic rigid transitions are giving a chance for the substrate protein to find its correct state. And the chaperone cycle is proceeding several times, one after the other, maybe 10 times, and after 10 or 12 times the substrate is becoming degraded, because the kinetics of the chaperone cycle is changing towards a slower kinetics, and it is giving an association with the proteasome, which is a protein degradation machinery in the cell. But this is not the important part. The important part is the plasticity and rigidity transitions of the substrate during the chaperone cycle. And if you are seeing the other chaperone as the example on the right side of the figure, which is the HSP70 chaperone, the 70 kilodalton heat shock protein, it is working very similarly, but it is binding only to a segment of the substrate and not the whole substrate. But it is again extending this segment of substrate, so it is getting it more rigid, and it is allowing to become more plastic afterwards when it is releasing it. And the same thing may happen. The substrate may again find its final conformation via this cycle during plasticity rigidity transitions. So my next example, example 2, is the example of cell differentiation. When the cell is getting to be differentiated, then it is the cellular network, which is a genetic network of the cell, is in a relatively rigid state, having a high order. If the network is relatively ordered, the entropy is relatively minimized in this network, the order is relatively high, then it is rigid. If the network is becoming differentiated, it is becoming even more rigid, slightly rigid, but this is significant, this difference. But what is the major message of this figure is in between. To become more rigid, so differentiated, the cell should go via a plastic state. And this is not actually one plastic state, but several potential pathways. And this is why there are two lines on this figure. In the reality, there should be not two lines only, but 100 lines or even more. Because the plastic state can be variable, because it is plastic, it can change. And to reach another rigid state, the system should go first a decomposition step, acquiring a plastic state, acquiring a state which is able to change, because the starting state of the system is too rigid to change. So first the system should be decomposed, should be less ordered, therefore more plastic, and then it may become even more ordered as a differentiated state. So This is a very general procedure in finding a new attractor of any complex systems, that you leave the old attractor, the original attractor, which was the progenitor cell, the original cell type, and you go to a new attractor, which is the attractor of the differentiated cell. But in the middle, in between, you have to be very inordered, unordered, very plastic, to be able to change. My next example, the third example, is disease progression. When the cells are healthy, then they are in the attractor of the healthy state. When they acquire a disease, then they are in the attractor of the disease state. But in between, they are becoming much more plastic. And they can acquire many, many states, including the particular disease state as well, or going back to the healthy state. Now, I just would like to illustrate this by the level of noise. When you are having a healthy cell, you have a certain level of noise, which is relatively low. When you have a diseased cell, then you have another certain level of noise, which is again low, quite sometimes a little bit higher than the noise level of the healthy cell, but again, relatively low, because these are two attractors, and in attractors the noise level is usually low. However, when you are going towards the disease, then you usually have a high level of noise. And I don't know if you have observed in yourself, then when people, or myself, I acquire a flu or a cold, then usually there is a transition period. Today I am still healthy. Tomorrow I will acquire the cold or the flu. So I will be sick. I will have a headache, I will have a sore throat, I will have muscle aches, a fever, and so on and so on. In between the two, today night or evening, I will be very, very annoyed. Usually, people are becoming very defocused when they are acquiring a disease. So this, if you are old enough, then this is becoming your experience. So you can actually identify yourself that, well, I don't have any reason to become so angry or so annoyed or so unusually excited. I don't see any reason why to become in such a state. So I might be actually in a transition, maybe from a healthy state, which was characterizing my day-to-day, to a disease state, which might characterize my next day, tomorrow. So this is actually a very important warning feature of our systems, complex systems, that they are becoming inordered, unordered, when they are transitioning to another state, for example, to a disease state. So please be aware of that. The first state is rigid, the healthy state, the transition state is plastic, and the disease state is rigid again. Now, my fourth example, next example, is the example of cancer stem cells. Cancer stem cells can change their plasticity and rigidity in any ways. So they are very flexible in the level of their flexibility, actually. So they may become a rigid cell and they may become a plastic cell, as they wish. This is their specialty, unfortunately. So what is happening then? If we have a normal, so if we have a usual cancer, unfortunately, someone has a cancer, then the usual cancer cell is relatively plastic, because this usual cancer cell has to divide very frequently. Now, if there is a treatment, chemical treatment, chemotherapy of the cancer, for example, then this, or radiotherapy, or any other types of therapies against cancer, then some of these cancer cells are becoming rigid. Most of the cancer cells are dying because they cannot survive. But some of the cancer cells are becoming rigid and they stop dividing. Now, most of these therapies are against cell divisions, And therefore, if the cell is stopping dividing, then the cell might escape this therapy. Most of the cancer anti-cancer therapies are against more fastly dividing cells, because most cancer cells are fastly dividing cells. So these therapies can be escaped by the simple trick that the cell is stopping divisions. It is becoming rigid. Now, that is going on until the therapy is on. When the therapy is over, this bloody, wicked cancer stem cell is changing itself again, and it's becoming plastic again from rigid, and is starting to divide again. And it is starting a new type of cancer, now becoming educated to the first type of treatment and becoming resistant to the first type of treatment. So this is why cancers are getting repopulated, and why most of the people can get secondary cancers and tertiary cancers. And secondary and tertiary cancers are much more lethal than primary cancers were. And most of the time, these cancer stem cells are the region, and because of their rigidity and plasticity. My fifth example is the learning of humans and animals. If I am giving you the example of human beings first, when the brain network was examined by fMRI, magnetic imaging resonance technique, and the active neurons were identified by this imaging technique. If active neurons were in the vicinity of other active neurons continuously, then they were classified as rigid neurons or non-flexible neurons. If active neurons were changing their activities and they were becoming silent and active again in the vicinity of other neurons, then they were classified as flexible neurons. So before the learning process, the animal had more flexible neurons. After the learning process, the animal had more rigid neurons. So quite many active neurons after the learning process were becoming fixed. So they had a relatively stable neuronal surrounding of other active neurons, which were becoming active because of the learning process. So the learning process is actually was stabilizing stable sets of active neurons. This is how the learning process is proceeding. Now, what was very interesting, that it turned out that if the animal had more flexible neurons at the very beginning, then the animal was more able to learn. So, well, the simple take-home message, which is an oversimplified message, if you have a brick instead of your brain, then you are not able to learn, because then your brain is very rigid. If you have a flexible brain, then you are able to learn. So, well, this is a quite simplified message, but actually this is true. So again, learning is processing or proceeding again between or via plastic and rigid states. And my next example, which is the sixth example, is giving you a detailed idea of this by the learning process of an animal, a singing bird. Now, this singing bird measured the beauty of the song of this singing bird. And the Wiener entropy variance was measured, which is giving the inordered structure or unordered structure of the song. The larger the entropy variance is, the more beautiful the song is. Because, I mean, just think about it. If the song is so simple that boo, well, this is not a very beautiful song. If the song is more complex than that, there is a larger variance in the tonality and in the frequency of the voice, then the song is more beautiful. So they just measured the complexity of the song by this measure. What they observed, that when the bird was learning the song, these are male birds, and actually these are attracting female birds by the beauty of their song. So this is very important for the in the bird's life. So when the bird was learning his song in the first day of his life, when he was able to learn songs at all, then the variance, the beauty of the song was obviously increasing during the learning process. But what had happened during the night? This bird was forgetting about this song. So the bird was starting from zero, almost zero, and it had to learn the song again. How come that evolution was evolving so stupid birds who are forgetting their songs and have to learn it again? Now, I am cheating a little bit with this figure because I am not showing you the whole figure. The whole figure is showing a whole sequence, various days, one after the other, when this bird was learning his song. And he had to forget his first song to be able to learn the second song, and he had to forget the second song to be able to learn the third one. And listen to this, the beauty of the songs is increasing continuously. So the beauty of the last song is about four times or three times higher of the beauty of the first song. If the bird haven't been forgotten the first song of his life, then he would stick to the first song. But he would stick to the beauty of the first song, and he would never reach the beauty of his very last song. So if you have your first idea and you stick to that, you never forget your first idea, and you never learn anything else, then you will have your first idea, no question about it. But you will not have your second idea, which might be better than your first idea, and you will never be able to learn any other ideas in your life. So you have to be able to forget to learn more. And that is a very important message. Now, this is true not only for birds, male birds, but this is also true for infants. And in case of male birds, not infants, these male birds were sacrificed, unfortunately, in some experiments. And in these experiments, it could be shown that the brain of these male birds were actually physically more rigid, because the connections in the brain were becoming more rigid in the center of song learning, which is an well identified center in the brain of the bird. So this is not only the final output, which was becoming more plastic and more rigid in various stages of this learning process, but the bird's brain was actually becoming more plastic and more rigid in the various stages of this learning process as well, as a physical object. So this is a very important and key experiment. My seventh example is the adaptation of complex systems showing you human creativity. Now, two major theories of human creativity were coming from Donald Campbell and Dean Keith Simonton, both were living in the United States, and they were both identifying various steps of creativity like blind variation and selective retention. If you have the blind variation, then you have plasticity. Then you may think whatever you wish. If you have selective retention, then you select only a few elements of your creative ideas at the first step, and you retain them, and then you start your next cycle of creativity adhering to these ideas and experiencing that these were your best ideas. If you have a brainstorming session, then the very powerful brainstorming session has two parts. The first part is when people have ample resources, they have food, they have light, they have very comfortable chairs, so and they are asked to have creative ideas, whatever they wish, without selection. Second part of the brainstorming session, the situation is changed. Food is removed. People are seated to uncomfortable chairs, light is dimmed, and people are asked to select some of their ideas from the first ideas which they had in the first session. And then another session might come when they are again given ample food, comfortable chairs, much light, and they are able to creatively start a new cycle of plasticity from their ideas which they have selected in the first cycle. And if they if you are doing this one after the other as a cycle, then you reach higher and higher level of creativity. This is very well established in decision making science and decision making processes like the PDCA cycle or the order loop. All of these cycles or these decision making processes are involving plastic and rigid steps. Now, the adaptation of complex systems, example 8, the next slide, is the learning of organizations. So this is also true for groups of people, not only for individuals. Nancy Dixon has identified the learning cycle, how can we learn collectively, and this is preceded by exploration and exploitation steps. Exploration when, for example, a startup company appears on the market. Then the startup company has many ideas and exploring these ideas. But finally, the startup company has to focus on first on his on its first product. And this is a very focused part of the game. This makes the structure of the startup company very rigid, actually, very relatively hierarchical from the original structure, when the startup company had a very flexible structure. Now, this is when the company is starting to produce its first product in the market, and it is optimizing its structure for this production. But if the startup company will have only one product, then with the life cycle of the product, the startup company will die together with the product, with the first product. So the startup company must loosen up its structure after a while to be able to acquire the second product. And when the second product is started to produce, to get produced, then the startup company, or the company, no, it's not a startup company any longer, it's a mid-sized company, has to be able to rigidify its structure again, becoming more hierarchical again. And once again, it has to acquire the third product, so it has to become plastic again. So a company is oscillating between a plastic and a rigid state continuously as it is developing new products. So you have to observe this if you would like to start a startup company. And my students have started several startup companies already, so we know how to do it. And we did this very procedure during this development. So actually there are some network independent mechanisms of this plasticity rigidity cycles, and one of them have been already introduced to you, and this was noise. If there is a high level of noise, it is able to produce a plastic network. If there is a low level of noise, it is able to produce a rigid network. Now, there are medium effects. The surrounding medium is affecting the network. For example, water. Water is affecting proteins. If there is water around proteins, proteins are becoming plastic. If there is dryness around proteins, they are becoming rigid. This is why dry meat is not decomposing that fast than the normal meat. Because the enzymes are becoming rigid and they are not able to digest the meat, and the bacteria are becoming rigid and they are not able to divide and they are not able to digest the meat either. So medium effects can be demonstrated by money. In the society, money is one of the most important media which are mediating plasticity and rigidity. If there is ample money available, capital, then the society is becoming quite plastic. If there is a crisis, economic crisis, and capital is becoming sparse, then the society is becoming rigid. So the socialist economy was actually a shortage economy, as it was defined by János Kornai, who is a famous economist of Hungary, living even today. And This society was very rigid. Believe me, I was living in a socialist system in Hungary, so it was indeed a very rigid society. That's why it was completed and finished several decades ago. Capitalism is usually a very plastic society, and it is able to change. This is the great advantage of capitalism, and this is the great advantage when you have an ample amount of money available, an ample amount of capital, which is characterizing capitalistic societies. Now, the next slide shows you that system resources are actually determined in the network structure. Plastic and rigid networks are having different structures. Plastic networks have soft spots, which are having an extended fuzzy core, fuzzy modules, no hierarchy, and they are source dominated. Rigid networks, on the contrary, have a small dense core. I told you that the core is a very important regulating function of networks. If it is small, then the network is becoming rigid. They have disjunct dense modules, the rigid networks, and they have a strong hierarchy, and they are sink dominated. Now, the applications, my next slide, first application is aging, the first application. Aging is actually a rigidity shift. We are becoming more rigid as we are becoming more aged. We have less water content, we have more rigid brains, actually, our way of thinking is becoming more rigid. So even epigenetic modifications are showing this, that the genetic networks are becoming more rigid. Aging is actually an increase of rigidity and a decrease in plasticity, like synaptic plasticity. Now, the evolution is another application. This is application number two. Evolution is proceeding via variation and selection. Variation is a plastic evolutionary network or environment. Selection is a rigid network. So evolution is proceeding via exploration and exploitation cycles. And this is true for in vitro RNA evolution, E. coli evolution, evolution of various viruses, and so on. So there are ample experimental proofs to prove that. So this is not only a theory, but this is experiments. The application number three is drug design strategies. For plastic and rigid cells, you need to design different types of drugs. Plastic cells are usually the cells which are fast-growing cells, like bacteria, like cancer cells. These are usually at bombarded or attacked by drugs which are against hubs of the plastic networks. These are attacking the centers of the networks, of these plastic networks. Now, if you are attacking a side of the network, of a plastic network, the plastic network will not transmit the signals easily. Plastic networks are usually dissipating the signals. Just think about a plastic object. If you are knocking on a plastic object, you don't see a voice. If you are knocking on a rigid object, and I am knocking on this dictaphone right now, sorry about it, then you hear the voice. And rigid objects are transmitting signals very easily. This is why rigid networks have a very different structure. And you must attack rigid networks very differently than a plastic network. If you attack a rigid network in the center, then you may overexcite the network because the network is transmitting the signal all around the network. So you should not attack the centers of this rigid network usually, a diseased network like a diabetic cell or a cell of a patient which has high blood pressure or which has a kind of continuous disease is usually rigid. So these types of diseases are requiring a different attack strategy, and this is the network influence strategy, when you attack not the central nodes but their neighbors. This can be very efficient, like for example multiple targets and allo network drugs are usually working like this. Now, application number four is actually intervention design, and this intervention design can actually boost the plasticity rigidity cycle or freeze the plasticity rigidity cycle. If you would like to acquire a change, then you are increasing the cycling of, between plastic and rigid states. If you would like to stop the cells changing their features, for example cancer stem cells, then you have to freeze the plasticity rigidity cycle. So finally, the next slide is showing you the summary that adaptation to gross changes of environment need a transient plastic phase triggering the emergence of unpredictable nodes, and reaching another rigid state is requiring a plastic state in between. So this is a gross emergence of independent unpredictable nodes, like the creative nodes, and this is an unrest, actually, revolution in the network structure. And the next slide is showing you that the gross changes of an environment trigger actually the emergence of unpredictable nodes. When the system is becoming jeopardized, its nodes actors are gaining more independence. So this is actually a blessed unrest, as it was defined by Paul Hofkin in his book. Now, my next slide, which is the last slide, is giving you the gross changes of environment as an example. This may trigger, again, emergence of unpredictable nodes in our body as well. When our body is having a severe disease, then our bacteria in our gut, in our belly, are experiencing a stress, because they are not fed enough, well enough, by our body. In this particular case, these bacteria are having an unrest, and they are producing toxins, so they are actually expanding the disease, and they are actually hoping secretly that the body will die, and therefore they can be actually liberated from this body, and they can find another body to become a part of that. This is a very unfortunate reaction of our bacteria, and this is actually warning us that we have to be very careful to nurture our bacteria very well in our body, because we are forming the same gross environment, and we are forming the same gross mega organisms as a complex feature. So we have to be a good owner, and we have to take care about our bacteria in our guts. So this is the take-home message, that if you are living a good life, then you are taking good care of your bacteria inside of you, and then they will help you. If you are living a bad life, then you are taking a bad care of the bacteria inside you, and then they will destroy you. So be a good owner of the organisms inside you and around you, which is our Earth, and then you may have a good life. And this is the take-home message of this lecture, and we will have a concluding lecture which will give you another flavor of the network changes as the concluding lecture of this series. Thank you very much for listening.